started rolling. The Germans did a front page like that. It's fraud in the Euro family. And the Greek got very, very, very angry, and it went all the way up to ambassador level, complaining about the Germans and so on. But the question that was not asked was, who was responsible of controlling this? We have, for the Euro, we have a sort of contract. We have an agreement, the Euro criteria. They are controlled by the European Central Bank, of course, but banks are always closed. So they are also controlled by the European Commission. So who controlled this? How come they were surprised? Did the Greek provide bad data? Were the officials in the European Commission asleep? Were the European Commission, did they get good data? Did they work well and did not publish? How comes they didn't publish? Or if they published, where is it? Can we see it? Did the bosses stop them from publishing the right data? All these stories we didn't hear about. The Greek story I really would like to hear. I mean, what happened in the Commission? Who controlled them? This has been going on for years. It can't come as a surprise, honestly. The next one, and there are loads of responsibility stories. Just think who's responsible and go outside of your own country, and you'll find lots of stories. Then there's another one that I call cross-border stories, and I really like this one. It's also a bit of advertising for the project I currently work on, which is fundraising to get research grants for investigative journalists in Europe. Now this one is about markets, really. It started with a Romanian colleague who heard a rumor about slave labor in the Czech Republic. And the story is organized crime organization or people from the Ukraine, Moldova, they lure people into, lure workers into the EU where they work in the Czech Republic picking asparagus. Now who owned the Czech company where they were kept in a camp? They didn't get, their passports were taken away, they didn't get their money before all asparagus were picked, so for months and months, or weeks and weeks, they didn't get any money. They were beaten, and they weren't allowed to leave the camp. The owner of the Czech company was a Dutch company. What I really liked was that a team of journalists from the Ukraine, Romania, and Moldova, and initially also a colleague from the Czech Republic, teamed up to do their Eastern European research. They got 3,000 euro as a research grant, and the entire team did all the work, including their travels and translations and whatever they needed. They tried to follow up in the Netherlands, but they couldn't get a comment from the Dutch company. Fortunately, some months later, it was picked up by Trouw here, who then followed up. And so we now got the entire trafficking story from the Ukraine all the way to the Netherlands, including a comment here. And this is about trafficking. I've been working with colleagues from Eastern Europe. There are trafficking stories about women, about weapons, about cigarettes, about labor. And as long as there is a market in the West, there will be trafficking. But if we don't follow the story from start to end, we don't do our job properly, really. So I see three ingredients to European investigative journalism. Ask the right questions, which is like the lifted finger. Ask the right questions. Go behind the daily news. And the method that I really, really like is common research and networking. We have 27 countries with 21 or so official languages, plus a few minority languages. And we have no possible chance to know all that. We have no possible chance to do the research ourselves. We have to network. So the good thing is that we have 27 countries, 21 or so languages, because we are not competitors. I worked on a story with a colleague from the Netherlands and a colleague from Flanders, and even though they have the same language more or less, they're not competitors because they don't quote each other, apparently. So pool the manpower, use the fact that we are different, and pool expertise. And I'll be more in depth on that later. And then also think about the impact. That's the third step. We have 27 ministers going to Brussels on each subject, like farm, like agriculture or fisheries or justice and home affairs. They go to Brussels, 27 people making the decision. If we don't provide the story in our countries, these ministers will not give a damn about the public, basically. So if we want any impact with our stories, we have to go international, European too. Now I would like to give you four examples on kinds of networking between journalists in order to do this type of research. And you have to think tactically. You have to think, what do you need for a particular story? So use the good old Anglo-Saxon journalist saying, follow the money, but switch it into follow the story. So what do you need for this story? Which type of cooperation, which type of network? I have four here, and I'll give you examples on them, because I'm a journalist, I like examples. But there's a one task which is a sort of very targeted on one particular detail of one particular story. Then there's a, what I call the follow-up, when you have like the trow did on the asparagus. There was the research was done in Eastern Europe, and trow followed up with the Dutch angle. There is what I call the loose cooperation, when you form a network going on researching and common tasks. And then you have a very, very close cooperation where you actually share interviews, where you share information that you usually wouldn't trust from anyone else. So you really have to trust the colleagues you work with. And the first example I'd like to give you is Gripen, that was a weapon sales from Sweden, where a Swedish team of TV journalists had research in Sweden, and they had this lead. They had all the documents, they had the lead that there were bribes in the Czech Republic. And they needed some interviews done in the Czech Republic and in the United Kingdom in order to prove, to get the final proof of the story. There was no other way around. But they didn't speak English. Well, they do speak English, but they didn't know, they didn't have a network of sources in the United Kingdom, and they didn't speak Czech. So they ganged up with some journalists in those countries. They got the documentation, and they could prove their story. And in that case, it was done as part of the Swedish documentary. I don't, if I remember right, it wasn't broadcast in the other countries. It was only quoted there. So there was a one task. They needed this one little help to prove this particular part of the bribe story. Certain politicians, certain officials who needed to go on camera and say,